So what I want to do today is talk a little bit about soil structure. I now make it 12 after. Specifically, the history of our ideas, how our ideas on soil structure have changed. I would argue that the structure of soils is arguably the most important characteristic that defines soils. That's what makes soils soils, is that arrangement that allows all of the things that soils do, all of the functions and so on, allows them to function in the soil. So I think this is a very important topic. And so I'm going to go through this rather quickly. The longer version is apparently supposed to be published in the next issue of Advances in Agronomy. And so, and again, I'm going to cover a rather large time frame, so this will be just a few bits and pieces there. So, just like that. Let us keep in mind what we're talking about. As we get into the details, which I'll spend most of my time on, let's keep in mind that this is what we're talking about. This is what it looks like. It is this arrangement of solids, voids, and different levels and so on that we're talking about. And sometimes there are roots in this. And sometimes it comes in rather striking colors as well. And so here we have the... this is taken in Japan. Under years of rice cultivation, you develop something like that. Okay. So, for those of you who still need about 15 minutes of nap time this morning, let me tell you where we're going, and so that when you wake up in 15 minutes, it won't seem quite as strange a landscape that you wake up into. Basically, the history of tillage is the disturbance of the immediate area of a seed. And we're talking about millions of years where this was the function of tillage, to prepare a seed bed with tilth, quality of soil, for seed germination and root growth. Began with people power, with sticks, then developed animal power, and then we developed plows to invert the furrow slice, and maybe this is where our problem started. we developed mechanical energy for tillage, and that's another possible source of the difficulties we see now, and which led to the final stage of decreasing disturbance of the soil. So for millennia, for thousands of years, we said, hey, developing the plows, and now suddenly we say, hey, we don't want to do that. Direct seeding, things like that, which is rather striking, interesting. So let's begin at the beginning. this is Stone Age. Rather interesting carving. The archaeologists claim that this is the first agricultural tool, which is, what do you see? The basket. Gathering was the first function. So these were the gatherers and hunters. And I prefer to invert those, because the hunters had their fun. The boys went out, shot something, read Shakespeare to each other, and ended up with a lot of empty beer bottles and so on. If they got something, fine, came home and they had a great feast. But the day-to-day calories had to come from the gatherers. And who were the gatherers? The women. And you may ask, how's this going to segue into tillage? And just wait for a minute. So what I see there, a figure which I don't know for sure what it represents. Am I doing something that causes a lot of banging here? I don't know quite who the figure is, but certainly to our modern eyes, that's a woman. There's no question about that. So here we are, the women who gathered. Who would have seen, would have found out where the plumpest seeds were? They would have found out where the roots were, which is another part of the gathering source of calories. They would have learned something about soil moisture in terms of harvesting roots. They would have learned where the animals congregated, where there was probably some organic materials and so on. So I argue from this that the first soil scientists were women. they accumulated the knowledge, the first knowledge we had about soils. So here we are. Let's call her Mary Tilth. She's the patroness of tillage. She or one of her daughters probably saw the phenomenon that pigs rooting in the soil, the seeds grew better next year. And the story goes that this is the source of tillage. You know, I don't know. I like the story, so I'm prepared to.
Excuse me. Did she publish?
No. This is the point, that her footnotes really didn't follow the standard soil, so she couldn't get it published. Let's fast forward. We've got 15 minutes to cover a few millennia. Let's fast forward to the Bronze Age. Now we have a technology. We're still stirring the soil. Call this a proto-plow, if you wish. There are other terms for it. But the thing to notice, several things. We now have animal power. And the interesting thing is, who's in charge now? As soon as we got some power, as soon as it went vroom, vroom, then the men got interested in it. Okay, so who's following on behind? So this is an interesting part that one could follow up in terms of sociology, in terms of gender change here. She's following on behind. She still has household duties. She has to carry her baby with her. One of the things that I'm not sure of is what she's carrying. People think that that's part of an apparatus for seeding. I think, in fact, it's a club of some kind to beat down the clods. Because if you do this sort of cultivation, almost a ripper, we would call it now, you end up with clods, which is not a seed bed. So somebody has to come along and beat those. And this was a problem for years and years. Here's an illustration from a 15th century Psalter, which E. John Russell had. They're beating the clods to create the seed bed from this sort of plow. And it's hard work. She's pooped. But this was an important part of the tillage process. So much for the pre-writing stage. We get to the Greeks and Dan Hillel has mentioned some of this. The Greeks had this sort of Mother Earth concept. The soil is the womb in which the seed is planted. And if you look at some of these and translate them literally into English, it is sweaty stuff, believe me. But that was their concept. It was a concept even much later. Shakespeare, in Measure for Measure, has this little piece that from the seedness the bare fallow brings to teeming foison yields, even so her plenteous womb expresseth his full tilth and husbandry. Again, gender things and so on. If we translate that into modern email English, all it would say is he got her pregnant. So the Greeks preferred to sit down and think about things rather than do things. It was the Romans that started to do things. Well educated, the soldiers who were the higher levels of the Roman army were generally well educated. When they were brought back home, they were given land. And so they became farmers. And here's they wrote a lot of books, actually. So this is the start of the writing. And the whole emphasis at that time was the plow. Here's something from Cato, a couple of hundred years before the present era, B.C. To till the land is to plow well. What next? To plow. What is third? To manure. So to them, soil structure, preparation of the seed bed was the important thing in land management. The first book is written in English, more or less English, Fitzherbert in 1523, the same idea. then is the plow the most necessariest instrument that a husband can occupy, husband in the sense of taking care of the land. So again, plowing. The plow, if you look through even recent literature, last century, Virgil Thomson wrote a suite, The Plow That Broke the Plains. I listened to this, I could not detect in the music any theme that also said, not only does it broke the plains, it also broke a lot of the people who were trying to do it, which created, of course, the problems in this way. So this is what the Romans had. So carrying on quickly, talk a little bit about the social culture in which tillage was practiced. There are records of early plowing ceremonies, certainly in Europe, probably in Asia as well, to encourage proper tillage. In France, in the 16th century, the king would come out one day a year and plow a couple of furrows to show the people the importance of tillage. And there are other references to this sort of thing. So that's the first part of the social culture, learning how to prepare the land well. And then we have these other things. There's a sense of well-being from the smell of freshly tilled soil. All goes into the sociology of tillage. The aesthetics of smooth, dark, clean surface. And that was still true 50 years ago. Pride in straight furrows. And all of this probably led to what has been referred to as recreational tillage. We probably continued with the plow, with tillage, after it should have become obvious to us that something is amiss here. This is not doing what it ought to do. It is no longer the first thing, the second thing, and then maybe third is the fertility. So, tillage and social culture. Fast forward again, in the 17th, 18th centuries, gentlemen farmers in Europe, in North America, would get together regularly at these meetings, and these were all written up as the proceedings of the conferences. They would talk largely about plows and the improvements that they had made in plows. Here's just one example. Taken from some of the early records of these agricultural associations. So plow was still the dominant thing. So let's look for a minute at our roadmap to see where we've come and where we're going on this. Prehistoric gatherers had local knowledge, certainly had the knowledge. The Romans, landowners, wrote books. Plows were the important thing. They included a fair amount of earlier knowledge that the Greeks had developed, that the Moors had developed during what we call the Dark Ages, were in fact the flowering of the Moorish culture. And so there's a lot of agricultural literature coming from there. Until the Renaissance, which was just talked about, maybe until about 1850, land users, agricultural societies. And so all of this developed from the users. And suddenly, about 1850, who took over? Not the men this time, the scientists. Okay? So this is the start of the development of soil structure, soil physics, soil science in this sense. I use 1850 as sort of a cutoff date. 1850 is approximately the date that von Humboldt wrote what was the last attempt to pull all the natural sciences together in his book Cosmos. But the scientists now were interested in static properties. They started to measure aggregates. They measured bulk density. They measured porosity and air diffusion and things like that. So this was the period. And then the second part of that changed about 1980, when we suddenly And I don't know quite how this happened. The ecologists say that the soils people taught them about soils. There is some evidence that the ecologists had to teach the agronomists about ecology. I would expect that 35 years ago, most agronomists couldn't even pronounce the word ecology. But suddenly, the emphasis was on voids, not on solids. It was on soil functions rather than static properties such as aggregation and so on. And so what we had about that time was the development of the idea of a hierarchy of soil structure, little units building up to larger units, and so on. And at each of these levels, there were voids, spaces of different sizes, and they had different functions, of course, based on their size. And this is where I start to use the term soil architecture. 3 minutes? Okay, we'll rush through this. Now where we are is that soil structure is no longer tilth for adequate seedbed preparation. Now tilth is for structure, habitat, for all these soil functions, decomposition, nutrient release, water partitioning, and so on. So quickly, where we were in 1950. Tilth was still, no one had really knew how to define it, except for seedbed preparation. Structure is related to seed condition, but the relationship wasn't close enough for prediction of properties. And I think we went through a period of about 25, 30 years of the doldrums on soil structure. We had no new concepts. We didn't know quite what to do with that. Let's skip this in terms of the 2.5 minutes that I have left. An early Chinese sage wrote that the reality of a building does not consist in roof and walls, but in the spaces within to be lived in. So here we've got a whole change. We're no longer talking about solids, the roof and the walls. We're now talking about spaces. The large living rooms for movement of water, the little closets under the stairs for anaerobic habitat, and so on. So, different concepts. And I've become dissatisfied with our definition of soils that we use most of the time. And you still see this. Soil is a mixture of minerals and of various sizes and organic matter. And then we go on to define the different sizes, sand, silt, clay, and so on. I like a more modern definition. Soil is the life-sustaining, biologically active, porous, and structured medium at the Earth's surface formed by inorganic particles, air, and living organisms. So as Henry VIII said to his wives, I won't keep you long, but I did want to spend a few more minutes on the social aspects of soil structure. Von Humboldt wrote, in order to comprehend nature in all its vast sublimity, it would be necessary to present it under a twofold aspect. First, objectively, which we've been good at for the last 100 and some years. Next, subjectively, as it's related in the feelings of mankind. So we get into the people and soils thing. Subjective views of soils, indigenous soil knowledge, ecosystem perspective of humans as part of the 1 minute. Okay, let's finish up quickly. The artist got in on the act, showed us what they thought soils looked like. Let me go back. That, to us, may not mean too much, but to the student first studying soils, that's probably what it looked like, soil science. So anyway, to finish off, 60 plus years ago, Jax wrote the union of mineral and organic matter to form the organic mineral complex, a synthesis as vital to the continuance of life as and less understood than photosynthesis. So I will leave you with those thoughts.